Welcome to the Amherst Wesleyan Church Sermon Podcast.
Just in case you're not familiar or you don't quite remember, in the Old Testament, God gave the Jewish people, the Israelites, a number of laws and rules to follow. And part of that was he gave them a number of sacrifices that they were supposed to practice on a regular basis. Now, when Jesus came, and we have the story of Jesus coming in the New Testament, when he came, we realized that the sacrificial system was no longer something that we needed to practice because he actually completed the work. He brought salvation. But we can learn a lot about God's intention for the Israelites, God's intention for you and I, and what he did in Christ by looking at the Old Testament and looking at the sacrifices. And so what we're doing over this month is we are examining the sacrifices of the Old Testament and trying to figure out, what were they really about? Why did God have them do those things? What was the meaning? What was the purpose? What does that have to do with us? If we're not going to practice those same sacrifices, then why do we even need to know about them? Well, last week you learned about the burnt offering, and Pastor Brad spoke about the burnt offering and what that meant and how it was a symbol of something being given over and dying so that we didn't have to. And there is lots of stories in the Old Testament leading up to that that explain that and flesh that out. And I would have brought to mind in the Israelites how God provided a way for them not to have to be sacrificed themselves. Well, today we're going to look at the second in that list of sacrifices, and that is the grain or the cereal offering. Imagine with me there are two different families. Two different men with two different families. One man goes to work, and he works hard, and he is careful with his money, and he doesn't go out and waste his money, and he's not a heavy drinker, he's not a smoker, he goes to work, he provides for his family, he makes sure that they've got enough money for good groceries, that the home is well taken care of, the home is repaired, that the car is working, he's making sure that he's either doing the work to the car and the house or he's paying somebody, and he's making sure he does all that. But he isn't very extravagant in how he talks about his family or what he does with his family. He goes and he makes sure that they are provided for and that they have the things that they need and that they have the opportunities that they need in order to grow and to be taken care of. He makes sure that he gives some time to his wife so that she can share some of the stuff going on in her life, and he spends time with his kids, helping them with their homework. But he's not really going out and buying them everything they ever wanted. He's not taking them on trips all the time. They're not driving a fancy new car. They don't have the 8-bedroom house. Everybody doesn't have the same bathroom. But he makes sure that they are healthy. Okay? And then you've got this other guy. And this guy is all about the extravagance. He talks to his family, and he loves his family, and he loves being with his family so much that he rarely ever goes to work. But somehow he manages to get the credit cards, and he spends all his money buying them gifts. He buys flowers for his wife. He buys flowers for his little girl. He buys remote control trucks and ride-in jeeps, the battery-powered jeeps for his boys. And he books them a vacation to Florida. And he has gone out and he rented a boat for the weekend. And he's constantly doing things like that. And somehow he has managed to figure out a way to work the system where he can max out one card and then max out another card and then kind of sweep that under the rug or something. And he, and, and he, And he is doing extravagant things for his family all the time. But they don't necessarily have great groceries. Their house is kind of falling apart. He buys them flowers, but he doesn't actually guide his kids. Which of these two men is actually being the better father? You might say, well, the first guy, he should probably be a little bit more expressive with his family, or maybe a little bit more affectionate with his family. But I think we can all say the first guy is probably taking better care of his family. The second guy has made a great show of it. It's great big, it's extravagant, it's flashy, it's something that people can go, oh man, look at what he's doing. But at the end of the day, it's the first guy who is actually feeding his family. In these sacrifices, there was a tendency for the people of Israel, and even in the church today, there is a tendency to think about the flashiness, the extravagance, the appearance of these sacrifices. There is the tendency to be concerned about how big it is, how flashy it is, and how people think about what we're doing. Well, I'm going to give this big gift to the church, or I'm going to go do this great big thing, or people are going to notice me because I'm doing this good thing, and I'm so good, and I'm so great, and I'm so humble. But what God is really concerned about is not how flashy and extravagant things are. He is concerned about what is really being fed. Leviticus chapter 2. Leviticus chapter 2. This is very early in the Old Testament, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus. Many of you have come to church for most of your lives and you took one glance at Leviticus and then you skipped it. Right? None of you are shaking your heads, but I know it's true. But I want to read to you Leviticus chapter 2. And this is what God says about the offering. He says, when anyone brings a grain offering to the Lord, their offering is to be of the finest flour. They are to pour olive oil on it, put incense on it, and take it to Aaron, who is the priest. Take it to Aaron's sons, the priests. The priest shall take a handful of the flour and oil, together with all the incense, and burn this as a memorial portion on the altar, a food offering, an aroma pleasing to the Lord. The rest of the grain offering belongs to Aaron and his sons. It is a most holy part of the food offerings presented to the Lord. If you bring a grain offering baked in an oven, it is to consist of the finest flour, either thick loaves made without yeast, and with olive oil mixed in, or thin loaves made without yeast and brushed with olive oil. If your grain offering is prepared on a griddle, it is to be made of the finest flour, mixed with oil and without yeast. Crumble it and pour oil on it. It is a grain offering. If your grain offering is cooked in a pan, it is to be made of the finest flour and some olive oil. Bring the grain offering made of these things to the Lord. Present it to the priest who shall take it to the altar. He shall take out the memorial portion from the grain offering and burn it on the altar as a food offering, an aroma pleasing to the Lord. The rest of the grain offering belongs to Aaron and his sons, and it is a most holy part of the food offering presented to the Lord. Every grain offering you bring to the Lord must be made without yeast. for you are not to burn any yeast or honey in a food offering presented to the Lord. You may bring them to the Lord as an offering of the first fruits, but they are not to be offered on the altar as a pleasing aroma. Season all your grain offerings with salt. Do not leave the salt of the covenant of your God out of your grain offerings. Add salt to all your offerings. If you bring a grain offering of first fruits to the Lord, offer crushed heads of new grain roasted in the fire. Put oil and incense on it. It is a grain offering. The priest shall burn a memorial portion of the crushed grain and the oil together with all the incense as a food offering presented to the Lord. Clear as mud? Everybody totally understand what this means? We can go home now? The reason we're preaching about this is because I just bought some shares in the salt plant down the road. No, that's not true. That's not true. There are a few elements here that are different from the other offerings and that are highlighted multiple times. And you've caught on to some of that already. Number one, it is supposed to be the finest flour. It is supposed to be mixed with oil, or there's supposed to be oil on it. It's supposed to be, we could say, anointed with oil. He stresses, you need to add salt to it. And he says, there will not be any yeast. He also says honey, but particularly yeast. Multiple times, no yeast, but add salt, add oil, and mix it with incense. Now, this is not just a recipe. This isn't just something that you guys need to understand and go home and know how to make bread. These are elements that are in here symbolically to make a statement to the people. Today, there are a number of diets out there that do not consist of bread. Actually, bread is the enemy. You shouldn't eat bread. Some of you have gluten intolerance and you can't eat it because it makes you sick. Other people have just chosen not to eat bread because of the carbs, and you're trying to lose weight and you don't like all that stuff. But in the ancient world, you basically couldn't survive as a civilization without bread. You either worked to grow grain, to make your own flour, to make bread, or you worked so that you could buy grain, so you could have flour, so you could eat bread and survive. It was the staple. It was essential. The thing that God provided for the Israelites when they were in the desert was manna from heaven. It was essentially a kind of bread. Bread was essential to life. And when people went to work, in one way or another, they went to work so they could get bread. They spent a lot of their lifetime pursuing bread. Jesus is called the bread of life. Well, as we dig into this, we find out that this offering, unlike the other ones, nothing has to die. The other offerings, something dies and the blood is spilled and it's taken and it's put on the altar. But this offering, nothing dies. It is just the grain with oil and salt and incense and no yeast. And so it is a living sacrifice that people spent their living pursuing grain. We know that in Revelation chapter 5, the author John says this about incense. He says, "And when he had taken it, the four living creatures and the 24 elders fell down before the Lamb. Each one had a harp, and they were holding golden bowls full of incense, which are the prayers of the people of God." We know that in 1 Samuel chapter 16, it says this, "So Samuel took the horn of oil and anointed him in the presence of his brothers, anointed David, and from that day on, the Spirit of the Lord came powerfully upon David." In Matthew chapter 16, Jesus warns them to avoid the yeast of the Pharisees. And in chapter 5, Matthew chapter 5, he says, "You are the salt of the earth. But if the salt loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again? It is no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled underfoot." I believe that these elements and what the New Testament brings out of these elements is that this offering was supposed to illustrate the life of the Israelites. That they were spending their working lives pursuing food, and their offering was to then take that thing that they worked their lives pursuing, take it, anoint it with oil, anoint it with the presence of God, fill it with incense, the prayers of the people, to add salt to it, to make it holy and more focused on God, and to make sure that they avoided yeast, that they avoided pride, that they avoided being filled up with personal selfishness, and that they made sure that they avoided sin. You keep sin and pride out of it, you fill with the presence of God, you add to it the prayers, your prayers. And then you add to it, even then, the salt of the earth, the thing that changes the world. Saying you're going to spend your life pursuing that, and that is going to be contained in this offering. And when you offer this up, that's what your life is supposed to be. The offering really wasn't about grain. The offering really wasn't about salt and oil and yeast. The offering was a symbol, was an expression of, this is what your life is supposed to be filled with. I want your livelihood to be dedicated to God. And this offering should represent your life. Paul, in Romans chapter 12, wrote this. He says, "Therefore, I urge you, brothers and sisters, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. This is your true and proper worship." Offer your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. There is only one living sacrifice in the list of offerings here in the Old Testament, in this first section of Leviticus, and it's this grain offering. I believe that Paul is making reference to this, and he's saying, your life was supposed to be expressed in the grain offering. Not just what you do on Sundays, not just what you do when you're at home and you're alone and you're reading your Bible, but how you spend your life, your work. Whether it's making food or earning food, what you spend your life doing needs to be free of sin, needs to be filled with prayer, needs to be covered but the Spirit of the living God. And it has to be the very best you can give. And I believe Paul fleshes that out. Paul highlights that. That this grain offering is a living sacrifice. And that we as a people are supposed to grow in holiness. And that is supposed to be our living sacrifice. That growing in holiness is our living sacrifice. It is our grain offering. What all this boils down to, I think, is that we in our lives need to learn from this sacrifice, and there are some things that we need to add and make sure that we have in our lives. Because our lives, if our lives are a living sacrifice, we then need to make sure that, one, there is no yeast. There's no leaven. It is not just about when we're here on Sunday that you're not swearing. It is not just about when you're talking to the pastor, you're not telling a lie. It is not just about whatever. It is about when you are home alone or with your family or you're at work and nobody else is a Christian around you, you are still living in a way that says no to greed, to pride, to hypocrisy, to lying, to stealing, to cheating, to selfishness, to hate, to bitterness and unforgiveness, to rudeness. You refuse to have any of that in your life. You say no to the yeast of the Pharisees, the yeast that corrupts, the sin that so easily creeps in and corrupts. And you know what yeast and leaven does. You just put a little bit in and all of a sudden it spreads to the whole batch and swells it up. It takes over. Your life is not supposed to have sin in it. The second thing is that you need to make sure that you are filling your life with prayer. The incense. That you're spending your time throughout your day praying to God and asking Him things and listening to Him. And I don't mean prayer like you maybe you've seen. I'm not expecting you to be out there working and then in the office, you're kneeling beside your desk and your client's waiting. You're like, just hold on, I'm just kneeling here. Or I'm not saying that, but our prayer life is much more organic. Where we can be talking to God throughout our day, and we can be listening to Him, and we know Him better and better, and so we hear Him when He speaks, and we follow His direction when He says, don't say that to that person, go talk to this person, go do this thing, don't buy that thing, walk over here, change that plan, spend your money on this thing, save your money for that thing, whatever. And God, I believe God speaks to you, and you need to fill your life with those prayers. I believe that you need to ask God to be part of your work life, to anoint your life with His Holy Spirit, to ask Him to cover and be part of how you deal with your family, how you go to school, how you behave at school, what you do for a job, how you work at your job. He needs to be covering over all of that. And you need to be the salt of the earth. So that when people interact with you, they metaphorically taste Jesus. That's the thing. When you add salt, you notice it, don't you? That's why McDonald's goes, because you notice it. You can taste it. When there's too much, you taste it. When there's not enough, you taste it. When it's just right, you go, People should be tasting God in your life when they interact with you. They should see the love and hope, forgiveness and honesty of Christ as they interact with you at your work. You are to be a living sacrifice, the grain offering. Was an expression of how the Israelites were supposed to live, because their lives, your lives, are the living sacrifices. And that is your pleasing and acceptable worship to God.
Thanks for listening and being part of our church and joining us in this journey to become down-to-earth people, following Jesus in down-to-earth ways.